Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to take the gloves off. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4. Please remain seated. Extinguish all smoking materials. And prepare yourself for the truth. The Politics Cafe. Frontline with Kit Jarrow. The Extreme Court. Try to remain calm. This is your last warning. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4.
All right, greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And yes, folks, we have a lot of fresh topics to go tonight. A little bit in the news here to go on. There was a presidential debate last night. Biggest thing that happened over the weekend, though, was coming out of the Northeast. I am sitting here, head held high, proud to be a member of the state of Massachusetts that hosts the Boston Red Sox, who came back from three games down to win the American League Championship Series last night. Good job, all you fellas. Good job to the pitching staff last night. Our two imports did one hell of a job. Brought it through. Final score was 11-3 or 11-2 last night. It was just fabulous. The night before was fabulous. The baseball has just been great. Congratulations also to the New England Patriots for their thrashing, an ultimate thrashing of the Miami Dolphins there yesterday. That was more fun than fiberglass underwear. That's all I can say. I mean, it was just, I'll tell you what. Yeah, go Red Sox. That's all I can say at this point, you know. I wish them the best of luck in their series against Colorado Rockies. And it's going to be a series, folks. You know, I got a feeling that this is going to be one of them seven-game series that goes right to the wire, because they are not up against any slouches as far as opponents. The Rockies are very, very good. But they will have to deal with the Red Sox bats, which are hot. Hot as it can be. All right, but first and foremost, I'm going to start talking here tonight. And the one thing, I got to admit that I hit a turning point over this weekend. And I have hit it with liberals everywhere. I am fed up with them. I am done with them. I've had it. No longer will I entertain any liberals coming into the room and trying to spout any nonsense whatsoever. None. This is it. You can plan on getting red-dotted, booted, bounced, what have you. Anything at my disposal is going to be gone. I'm also going to do the same thing in public life and in private life on the outside. Any liberal out there that might require my services, even though he may be offering me his good money, and I don't care if he earned his money or not, I ain't taking part of it. You can go find a liberal to do what it is that you need to be done. Period. I am sorry. But the fact of the matter is, folks, as conservatives, as Americans, as honest, working people, we have been abused by these people for too long. And I am talking abused. We have been enabling our destroyers for too long. It has gone to the wire with me, and I am just totally fed up with it. I am sick and tired of these people crying for public funding for all of their little pet projects. Not a single one of them are paying anywhere near the taxes that we are paying. They have got their own little setups out there. They know full well that, yeah, well, maybe they're pulling off the tax scams. Maybe they're not. But the fact of the matter is, I'm just sick and tired of watching them take it back for their little poopy little pet projects, for dance companies, for museums, for theaters, for commercial enterprises that would be failing in the commercial world, and yet somehow or another, we have been expected to tote them along. And it's going to get even worse. I'll tell you something. We are looking down the road here, and unless we can gather ourselves up together and get a Republican nominated. And at this point in time, I'll take a half-conservative Republican over any of the Democrats. We may be in for big trouble if a Democrat hits that office. So I'm going to tell you something, folks. It's about time that we turn around and we just stop. And we stop enabling our destroyers. Okay? They destroy us with our own money, with the money that they are taking from us in taxes. And if you stop and think about it for a minute, they can't do it if we're not giving them the money. And the way I see it, right about now, we got about a year to prepare for them, and a year to warn them, and a year to just let them know that we're not going to take it. Okay? Should a Democrat get elected to office, I am calling right now for a general strike on everything. You heard it right here, folks. This may well be my last show tonight. You never know. I fully expect to halfway go to jail for what I'm saying tonight. But I'm at that point in time. I'm fed up with it. I am totally fed up with them. I'm fed up with their actions. I'm fed up with their words. I'm fed up with getting booted out of their rooms for trying to talk civilly with these people. Okay? They do not wish to talk civilly with us. I am sick and tired of just hearing them rant, rave, and start dragging personal insults into it every time they lose a debate. And they have yet to win a debate around me, that's for damn sure. I'm tired of it. That's it. They're done as far as I'm concerned. I will not tolerate them for one more second. And I'm here to try to lead the way down the road, okay, that if they win, we're not going to tolerate them being in there. And it's that simple. So, folks, I'm going to tell you something. We've got a year between now and the next election. I'm going to ask you to do a little something for yourself, and I'm not asking you to really sacrifice anything, okay? This is the big thing. I'm not going to do what the Democrats do and tell you, well, in order to get what you want to have, you know, a little sacrifice has to be made. In order to make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs. I want to get yourselves ready, because I'll tell you something. I am sick and tired of enabling our destroyers, and I'm going to tell you something right now. Should the time come that a Democrat gets elected to office, they're not getting another nickel out of me for 1 month. That's it. For 1 month, I will have saved up enough money to pay whatever bills that I got to pay through that month. You know, my mortgages, my payments, enough for food. But I'll tell you what, if through that month, they will not grab 1 cent of tax dollars out of me. I will not go out and spend anything more than paying my bills and to feed my family and keep the money on the table or keep food on the table. That is it. I will not go to work for anyone. I will not be paying any income taxes for that month. And I'm hoping you all join me. Because I'm telling you something, folks. We enable these people. Every time that we sit down and we agree with them, we compromise with them, we know, whatever it is, we end up getting the short end of the stick. And I'm sick and tired of getting the short end of the stick with these people. I am sick and tired of being told to shut down. I am sick and tired of them trampling all over our liberties. I'm sick and tired of them just trampling on the word liberty. I am sick and tired of them trying to compromise freedom due to some religious greater good. All right? Fact of the matter is, all of your greater good ideas belong in the realm of religion and out of government. And I am sick and tired of enabling you to use the government to achieve your version of the greater good, which is nothing more than some religious principle that you have garnered out of thin air somewhere and that you cannot prove. I've had it with it. I have totally had it with it. It has gotten to that point with me. I'm telling you right now, folks, if they come into this room, they start talking, if they start giving me any beef, bang, boom, bang, right out of the room, bounced. I am not going to listen to it. I'm not going to listen to their insults anymore. Okay? I'm not going to listen to the better world that they think they got planned, their utopian socialist universe. None of it. I've had it. That's it. The beef, I'll tell you something. The beef right here, I've been so fed up with them, especially after this weekend, trying to talk sense with some of them, especially over the S-CHIP program. How many times have these people out there understood, that Bush did nothing more than veto a huge expansion of it? That Bush was actually willing to expand the program somewhat to help include more poor kids into it. But this is baloney. And then they're going to turn around, and all we hear from them is that Bush is cutting health care for children. What children? The 25-year-old children that the Democrats wanted to include into this? For what? No, I'm sorry. I am sick and tired of them spinning everything out of control. I'm sick and tired of everything that's being printed in the New York Times. And I'll tell you something. Beyond this tonight, we're going to lead some other forays, too. We are going to start heading right down the line and start writing letters to every single one of the advertisers and all these liberal newspapers out there. We're going to tell them, sorry, we are boycotting you, your goods, and we're going to start smearing you all over the world the same way we're smearing the New York Times, the L.A. Times, the Washington Post, and all of them. I've had it with them. I am sick and tired of this. We are going to start hitting these people where it hurts. And in the end, if they still end up winning, we're going to hit them where it really hurts. We're just going to cut off their funds. That's it, period. Okay? They have to understand that this world, okay, is populated with hardworking, honest people. An honest person is a person who knows he cannot consume more than he has produced. Period. That's the way it works out there, okay? You cannot consume the production of other people simply because you have found a government that is willing to hold a gun to that person's head and take what that person has produced and redistribute it to you to consume, who have not produced anything, who have done nothing but moan, whine, and cry that the government isn't helping you out, that the United States government, the richest entity in the world, is not doing anything for you, you who deem yourself to be poor only because you're unwilling to go out there and take a risk with your life. Too bad. I'm tired of enabling the destructors. All right, actually, I'm going to open up the discussion here. We're going to get to the news a little bit later on, but I got a guy named Woody coming up on the mic here behind me. He says he's going to tell me something good. And Woody, you want to hear it?
Well, I got two things for you, BB. I agree with you with the tax and so forth. But this past weekend, I ended up having to pull a double shift because they had the Muslims pulling off like what Martin Luther King did. They marched on the Capitol, and they needed all the medics and all the police. I mean, you're paying for it, people. Get it? Throw your heads. That's your taxpayer money. No, it's my nickname. But what I wanted to tell you was, Phoebe, did you happen to catch the news tonight? The U.S. Capitol was shut down from 8 o'clock until noon. And the reason being was Muslims were blocking entrances so that members of the House and Senate could not get in to do their work. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. And once again, you ended up having the welcome back, Tide Boy. The Muslims want more of their health benefits. Supposedly they're the ones claiming that their quote unquote children are not being on the SCHIP program. And I'm sorry, I work hard, and I do not like to give up my hard-paid taxes to feed these people, to house these people. I do not want to give them free medical care. I think it's high time they go back to where they came from. It's ridiculous. I can give you an example of what goes on in the district. If you're a firefighter or a medic, I'm a medic stationed out of Andrews, and you get a call to a Muslim home or business, they want you to take your boots off before you enter now. So, that's exactly what I said, BB. They know exactly where they can put it and how fast they can put it there. Hey, Rouge, how you doing? But I'll tell you, this is getting ridiculous, folks. I don't know about you, But I work hard for my tax, my money. I do not want to give my money away to people who are not willing to work. Go to a Super Kmart. You will not find any pork products in their food area. It's high time we secure our borders and we keep it. And with that candlelight, I pass you the mic.
Candlelight, go right ahead there. You're up on. You're up on. I'll answer him after you're done. Candlelight, you want the mic? It's all yours.
Hello, how you doing? I must have a little lag because I went to go push the mic and it was blocked. I guess for a New Yorker, I'm not in any hurry to go anywhere. Little patience here, believe it or not. Okay, hello, I'm from Niagara Falls, New York, and I do want to bring up two issues. One, how do you feel about illegal aliens? I know I said that wrong. Getting driver's license. And two, I want to make another point. I recently was on one of these Pal Talk little shows, and somebody kept saying that they see New York as an empire. And they keep saying the Big Apple is part of New York City, but they keep talking about history, but I guess they don't really look at the history, because New York City is not the capital of New York. It's not. Last time I knew, it was Albany. Now, I'm over here in the western New York, and I know Albany is the capital of New York, not New York City. And, one, I am from New York City, or not New York City, but from New York. I have Lake Ontario and Lake Erie above me, and yeah, I know what it means to be stuck in the middle. It's often hard, but why are we giving illegal aliens driver's license? And why are there so many illegal aliens in the first place? Are we giving them the best of the worlds when it comes to being legal? Maybe I don't know the standards of what it takes to be a legal alien, okay? Now, where I live, I can spend one place and see faces from all over the world. But yet, I don't see me going there. Although I like the Canadians, don't get me wrong. Ever since the penny dropped, they came over here and they've been really making the businessman laugh all the way to the bank. But if they want to put all that time in the purchase, that's more power. Okay, granted, I just brought up two. One, the capital of New York is not New York City. Two, I brought up about illegal aliens getting driver's license. And yes, I like those Canadians. I feel sorry for them. They have to sit on those bridges to get over here, but they've been spending a lot of good money over here. Back to you, Rubies. Thank you. Niagara Falls, New York, out. Back to you.
All right, well, thanks a lot. Yeah, it's a crying shame what Elliot Spitzer is doing up there in your state. Yeah, I think most of the world, actually parts of this world that you're going to find in these rooms here, are well aware that Albany is the capital. I am. I travel frequently up to Albany and also make my way down to New York City once in a while. And yeah, I know the difference between the two. But I can't understand it. You have a lot of your state legislature in there that's fighting Elliot hard on this one. And I hope they win. It's utterly ridiculous. You know, he's only doing this so that they can get provided those free services that should be there for their citizens, period. You know, it's bad enough. New York is one of the most socialist states in the union. They've got the highest property taxes. They've got high school taxes that they pile on top of the property taxes. And it's nuts. But this is what I'm talking about, folks. When they get in there, what happens? We enable them. We turn around and we hand them our good, hard-earned money for them to squander, waste, and do whatever they please with it. and hand it out to those who have aren't putting anything into it. I'm sorry. You know, any premise out there that you can direct to me that says, we have to help the poor, or we have to help this, or we have to help the other, it'll make us a better society. No, it won't. Prove it to me. Okay, I'm sorry, but you cannot prove it. You have been trying to prove it since the 1960s. You have not done it. Okay, the war on poverty has not worked. Okay, it's over. It's time to end the war on poverty. Okay, people are going to have to figure out their own way out of poverty. That's all there is to it. Do I sound mean? No. But what I'm talking about right here is that all of these premises are religious in origin. They belong in the premise of religion. Okay, any of them. All right, now if you think the poor people need more help, then you get down to your church, your pastor, you give him some of your hard-earned money, and you tell him to make sure that the poor get it. And if you think that that's not enough, then you go out and you round up your neighbors to take him down to the pastor and do the same thing. And if the pastor ain't putting it where you think it ought to be, then grab the pastor by the collar and by the coat and the seat of his pants and toss him out of the church, and you become the pastor, and then you straighten things out the way you want to. But leave the government out of it. The government has no part in taking, no business whatsoever taking part in any welfare programs, any socialist redistribution of our wealth, none of it whatsoever. The government has two main functions. Keep the peace, defend the country. Period. That's it. Okay? It has an army that has to be supported. Okay, our armed forces, and it has a court system to settle disputes. And disputes that arise between two people can be settled in court peacefully. That's it. That is the end of the function. Okay, it is not there to regulate anything. It is not there to redistribute the wealth. It is not there to make sure that it is a level playing field for anyone. Okay, we all have a level playing field. We are all on the same planet. We all got to deal with the planet in your own way. And that's all there is to it, and I'm sick and tired of it. You know, I really am. This is why I'm saying, should these people get elected, we need to just take a month off. I'm talking about every hard-working person out there, okay? The hard-working person that drives their goods from one end of the country to the other, okay? Needs to sit back and think about where these goods are going and who's getting them, okay? Put a little bit aside for yourself and hang on to it. Because, you know, wait and see what they're going to do when they can't get your services anymore. When they can't get your services and they can't get your money. Okay, and just sit back and say, no, I'm sorry, but I'm taking this month off. It's a vacation, and I am no longer going to support those who are trying to destroy me. Just not going to happen. Okay, MD guy, you got your hand up. The mic is all yours.
Wow, thank you, baby. You know, I couldn't agree with you more, and as a prime example, I'll give you this wonderful state of Maryland. Our first Republican governor in 40 years left a $1 billion surplus, which should have been sent back to the taxpayers. But the succeeding administration has managed to spend that $1 billion. The state of Maryland now faces a $1.7 billion deficit. And the plan of the governor is to raise the income tax, to increase the sales tax by a penny to 6%, to increase the titling tax for automobiles. And I don't see anything at all about reducing expenses. In fact, there was a proposal from the General Assembly to provide in-state tuition to illegal aliens, criminals. I think that that is a prime example of what the libs operate. Unfortunately, City of Baltimore, People's Republic of Montgomery County, and Prince George's County control the state. That's unfortunate. BB, I'll turn it back to you.
Yeah, I hear you. It's this is it. And you folks in Maryland have just got to wake up to this. You know, there are hardworking people in Maryland. You know, there are people down there who are being abused by them. They've got to understand this. They've got to understand that their abuse must not be tolerated anymore. We cannot take this laying down. And I'm not asking anybody to become violent out there. I'm not trying to start a civil war. You know? I'm not asking for anyone to go out and start shooting or unload or to call open season on liberals. No need for that. No need for it whatsoever. You know? But the fact of the matter is, we enable them. You know? And I'm sick of it. I'm sick and tired of handing them the weapons that they need to destroy us. I'm just not going to do it anymore. Sorry. Sabaku, the mic is yours.
Hey, everybody. I know this is old news, but I've just got to say it. The Democrats, again, their latest smear campaign, and they knew that that's what they were out to accomplish. It's not to help the children with health care. That's not what the object of this was. It's to make Bush look like he's a cold-blooded, warmonger Republican. I'm sure most of you must see it like I see it. They knew very well that Bush would not go along with paying health care for children who live in their families that make $83,000 a year. Now, come on, guys. That's not helping the poor. You know, why not double the number of kids and help the poor kids in the $20,000 to $25,000 a year poverty level range? That's how you, if you're really sincere, that's how it would have been done. And I know everybody sees it the way I do. People that earn $83,000 a year, they don't need health care for their children. That's a joke. Most of them, their employers assist them with health care, if the employer is worth any salt at all. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Well, it's more than just the employer. It's you as the employee who are doing it. Yeah, now let me explain something to you. If you weren't there performing that labor for that employer, all right, he would not have the money to put in as part of his share of your health care. All right? So it's still, I mean, you know, the way I look at it, it's a raise that you should have gotten, okay, that you didn't get. And most of us agree with this. That's the thing about it. But to me, that's an agreeable situation. You know, I look at that situation and say, yeah, well, you know what? Look, I'm going to end up having to spend that money. You know, whether my boss spends it or whether I spend it, I'm making it, all right? So if you're going to provide a good policy that both of us can afford and we can agree to it, fine. I don't have a problem. That is how things are done in this country. We do things by agreement. We enter into contracts strictly by mutual agreement, where both parties are willing, both parties are able, and both parties will be held to the terms of their agreement. But they don't, you know, if you don't like the agreement, you can walk away from it. It's that simple. It's easy, you know, just say no. You know, it's very, very simple kind of thing. But, I mean, let's face it, we don't do that. You know, when we go to look at a job, we look at the kind of benefits and we look at the pay. If the pay is enough and the benefits are enough, well, we go and take the job and we give them a good job. And that's what most of us out there are doing. Most people that I have run into are very proud to do the jobs they do. You know, no matter how menial it may seem to someone else. You know, no matter how boring it might seem to another person, you know, no matter how hard it might seem to another person, most of us enjoy doing what we do. And we do it for the, you know, as agreed to the terms when we were hired. And as we, you know, we worked that out along the time. You know, I mean, how many people in here have actually, you know, done a really good job for the boss and then after a period of time gone up and asked for a raise and got no? You know, now the boss might turn around and say, well, look, for some reasons I can't quite give you what you want, but darn, I want to keep you here, so I'm going to give you something. And you reach an agreement. You bargain back and forth. That's what it's all about. We bargain for everything. There's no problem with that. None whatsoever. But there's absolutely no bargain going on whatsoever if I fail to pay my income taxes and the IRS shows up, knocks at the door, puts a gun in my head, says, give me the money. Give me the money or I'm dragging you into court. And if you don't give me the money in the court, I'm going to throw you in jail. I'm sorry, that's robbery. That's all that is. You know, that there is doing something beyond agreement. That is doing something dishonest, period. Most of us out there honestly work and honestly make our money. And I don't have a problem with anybody out there honestly making his money and honestly doing whatever he wants to do with it once he's earned it, because it's his. It's his property. He owns it. He or she can do whatever they please with whatever it is they've earned because they earned it. It's theirs. It was wealth that they created. Okay? They created that wealth by performing whatever labor was necessary to get some consumer to buy a product or a service. Okay? That is wealth creation. That's how it works in this country. When you've created it, you own it. You are the proper owner of the creation. So, I'm sorry. I got no problem with people keeping their money. But to be told that, you know, I'm going to give it up and I'm going to have to keep on giving more and more, and I'm going to have to make sacrifices so that other people can live. I'm sorry, enough of a sacrifice just trying to live on this planet. Okay, it gets cold here. Okay, I have to eat on a daily basis. My family has to eat. My family has to be kept warm. They've got to be kept clothing. They've got to kept a roof on their heads. You know, it takes things to live here on planet Earth. Okay, the fight out there should be man against nature. It should not be man against man. Sabaku, my friend, you've got your hand up. Go right ahead.
Thanks, BB. I just wanted to add to the healthcare thing. One thing that would help, I mean, the last thing in the world I want to see happen is socialized medicine. Some people say that we have a bit of that in this country right now. Well, let's don't expand it, okay? But what we need to do is create competition between the insurance companies, make them compete for your business, for my business. You understand what I'm saying? I have relatives in Canada, and I love Canada, and I love the Canadian people. I have relatives in Germany, and they're great people, and in England. But you know what? I have never heard any of them say anything good about government-run health care. Not one word did they say that was positive. Honest to God, people, in this country, you do not want that kind of health care. Let's drop the borders between the states. Let's make it a law that you can buy your insurance from Seattle, Washington, your health care insurance. You can buy it from anywhere in the 50 states. That's what we need. We need competition. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And you're absolutely right. It does need to come down that way. The only way it's going to really work out with insurance companies, though, is with some form of tort reform. And some simplification of managing how it's got, you know, or how you go about it. You know, I don't have a problem with it. And I'm going to be honest with you. Doctors out there at this point in time, especially your private offices and whatnot, have got to hire two people just to keep up with all the insurance claims that they got to make. You know, could be a problem. Maybe it's worthwhile for somebody to come around and just become a good insurance clearinghouse. Kind of what's happening up here in the state of Massachusetts. Now, Mitt Romney is out there right now claiming that, you know, what he has done up here has helped a lot of people. And, you know, but basically all he's done is demand that everyone in his state be insured or you lose your tax refund. But he has made it available. And they got this thing up here called the Insurance Connector Board. And I got to admit that I do know some people up here, especially retired people, who have managed to get onto what's called MassHealth for nothing. Now, some of these people, you know, deserve it. Some don't. You know, it's going to be tough to find the line between the two of them. But, you know, now if it works out to where he can actually get insurance companies to come in here, compete against each other, and thereby lower the insurance premiums, well, then it will be a win-win situation. But we will see. At any rate, to hear from the insurance end of things, we have my buddy MindWarp. You put your hand down. Yeah, there, you're back up. MindWarp is really more on top of the insurance deal than the rest of us. It can explain what's happening out there. Mind, the mic is yours.
I don't know about that. My brother knows an awful lot. My brother owns a corporate healthcare corporation. I won't give the title because, well, we're tens of thousands of people hear this. I don't know if my brother would exactly like me saying this. It was said in confidence, but I'll say it. I have the right to. It represents me. Okay. The middleman, my brother is. He's the underwriter. He'll find the insurance company the best deal for your corporation. He doesn't deal with private health care. He deals with corporate, which means his job is to insure corporations of 4,000 employees and up. He'll find the greatest deal for them. Well, this is his opinion. He's going for Hillary. He's going for Hillary because Mitt Romney's plan cuts him out, and Rudy Giuliani's plan cuts him out. Now, he's an American corporation, and normally the health insurance companies support the Republicans. I don't think so this time around. But that's because, and this is my brother's words, Rudy's plan is the best plan for the people. for the people, not for the insurance companies like Hill. If you make insurance much more attractive by running from the middleman and finding your own and causing competition, well, then he's not needed anymore, or he's phased out, or it becomes a very small market for him. A lot of insurance companies right now are going to back Hillary's health care because at least they have some standing left. The Republicans actually cut him out. But it's good for the people, which means the Republicans at least know what they're doing. Hillary, you're not sure what you're going to get from her and how much it's going to cost you and how much it's going to cost the insurance companies or how much it's going to save them, because that's why they would support the opponent, because it favors them. So there's your thought.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, and the worst part about it is nobody really knows the details of Hillary's plan. We really don't. You know, everyone wants to say, well, it's going to be some kind of single payer, it's going to be universal, what have you. And the part of this that I really don't understand is why the medical community isn't waking up to this and looking at how the government has run what health care it runs at this point. Now, for all the services out there, okay, and especially for the gentleman that said he worked out of Andrews Air Force Base as a medic, which I did also, okay, I worked right at Malcolm Groh Medical Center down there, very proud of it, and was very proud of the job that the doctors did down there. I got a chance to work with some really high-class professional people. I learned a lot. I saw the pride that they took in what they did. I saw the effects of their training. I saw how deep it was. I saw how much they stayed on top of current events. On top of current diagnostic procedures, current treatments, and I mean the guys were unbelievable, you know, they really were. But it was also one of the more expensive ones out there, no doubt about it. I mean, it's a government-run kind of thing. But then, by the same token, one of the costs that they managed to keep down was the fact you can't sue them. Okay, they did something wrong for you. Well, they'll bring you back in and do all they could do to fix you, you know, if there was a fix that could be done. But there was no suing the U.S. government or suing the armed forces for anything that happened to you underneath of, you know, as far as under their medical care. Forget that. All right, so when are they going to wake up? Now, the part that I don't understand out here is the rest of the private doctors and stuff, why don't they see this coming? You know, the point in time is going to have to come. They're going to understand this, okay? Now, look, once you are giving it away, once they've opened up every single health care center and every clinic and every doctor's office to everyone out there that's going to be paid by the same person, read that a single employer. Okay, that employer is going to have some say in the distribution of the patients, because otherwise one doctor is going to get overloaded and there's going to be four or five doctors standing around doing nothing. You're going to find areas that are not going to have enough doctors and other areas are going to have too many doctors. And obviously, if you have a great need for doctors in this area and not such a need for an area where there are many doctors, we're going to have to shift some of them doctors down there. So the doctors are basically going to be forced to go from from area A to area B to provide the needed service. Okay, it's triage. Every doctor out there knows what triage is. Okay, he who needs it the worst gets it first. That's the way it works. Okay, and that's exactly what's going to happen. And it's going to work that way with areas. It's going to work that way through all sorts of functions of their business. And they are going to end up having to do things that, A, they didn't agree to, B, things that they don't want to do, and or C, having to do this for whatever it is that the government dictates to them that they can be paid for. Well, I'm sorry, but any private employer or any single employer throughout the last 150 years that ever acted in such a manner ended up with one thing at his door, okay? That was a union representative looking to strike a bargain or go on strike. It's that simple. Now, the doctors and the nurses out there, I don't know why they don't see this coming. I really do not know why they can't see this coming and can just turn around and say, look, folks, you know, you're going to give us this single-payer health care. You're going to have one employer. Well, that employer is going to have to learn that this is how we do business and turn around and unionize against them ahead of time. If the medical community would start, they would get themselves organized under the banner of the AMA or some other institution that they could trust, unionize, set rules for themselves, set who's going to do what jobs, how much we're going to take for it, blah, 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 and start throwing those things on the table and start shoving them right under Hillary's nose and every other candidate's nose out there. you know, and why they haven't gotten to this point, why they're all sitting on their hands, and why some of them are even writing letters to the paper saying, oh, we can't wait for universal health care. You know, which, believe it or not, most of them think that they're going to be able to go on doing what they were doing before, and they're going to have to, and they're going to be able to cut down their staff, or they're going to be able to eliminate the staff, and that portion of the staff that has to go out there and deal with the insurance companies on a daily basis. Because they all got it. Every doctor out there has got someone on his staff who is a medical administrator who has to file the claims with the different insurance companies, you know, and then has to chase them down when they won't pay, has to chase them back and forth, because you know how insurance companies work. Oh, I'm sorry, but you didn't send us form 4015-66Y. We need that in order to process your claim. You know, of course, we can fill out that form and send it back. And sorry, you have another form here that you haven't filled out. You're going to need that before you process your claim. Blah, 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 blah. And you know how they get backlogged. You know how long it takes to get your money out of them. And the state is absolutely no better. Here in Massachusetts, okay, they generally run about 90 days behind. Okay, anyone who... Now, here in Mass, we've already got it. Okay, you know, as you all know, I've been in and out of the hospitals here for the last couple of weeks with my wife, and in every one of these emergency rooms and what's the place I'm looking for? Not the receptionist, but the admitting offices. They've all got signs there that say you are entitled to health care if you cannot afford it. Period. Okay, state already picks up the tab for anybody that cannot afford it. That simple. Now, of course, you're going to have to fill out some financial paperwork to go along with this, but the state will pick it up. But the state takes 90 days, and generally, as a rule, only pays 70 cents on the dollar once they do pay. All right? State of New York is even worse. The state of New York likes to take things, and once they get a little overburdened, well, they just ship somebody from the Joint Commission on Healthcare into your place, who will write a 1,000-page report on little tiddly items that they found wrong, that don't comply with their rules and regulations, and they just shut you down for 30 days or 60 days to tell you we're not going to pay you at all until you get this, 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 and this fixed. You know, and of course, that happens here in Mass once in a while, too. They have another Joint Commission on Healthcare or something along that line. But, I mean, this is the way they operate, you know. They're worse than insurance companies for the most part when it comes down to it. Most insurance companies will tell you what they will pay and what they will not pay, okay, but they don't come into your facility and tell you how you should run things. You know, can anybody remember the 13th Amendment? You know, why is this getting overlooked? And how is Hillary going to overlook this to perform health care? I don't know. But, I mean, you know, why the doctors and nurses are falling down on this job, I don't know. But the time is going to come, and you will see it. You know, should we get to the single payer or universal health care, all right, you know, doctors and nurses are going to finally find themselves overburdened or shifted, underpaid, the whole nine yards, and they will end up going out on strike, and we're all going to suffer when it happens. Hey, innocent me, trust me, okay? You know, I don't know if things have gotten any better. Right now, I will admit that the health care that I have seen delivered over the last couple of weeks, especially with my wife, you know, I will do nothing more than say thank you to every single one of the people that worked on her. I mean, from diagnosis of her heart condition at 10 o'clock in the morning to the fact that they had it repaired by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, in the meantime, shipping her 50 miles from one hospital to another to get it done. The care she got along the way, the care she got in the reception there, how fast and smooth everything moved, how quick they got to look at her, how fast they got the catheter in there, how fast they got the stent in there, boggles the mind. And I mean, it was really, really, really good. And at this point in time, I want to say thank them, you know. And I'm sure that our insurance company, when it writes its checks to them, will be thanking them quite, you know, profusely. And I will be thanking the insurance company for doing what they agreed to do when we made their payments and joined that insurance company. It might have been a little bit expensive, but of course, it just paid for itself the way I look at it. You know, it was a damn good move on our part to obtain that. So there you have it. You know, for my point, you know, the only thing I could say out there from their point at this point, let's just, you know, get some tort reform. You know, that would at least ease some of it. And if you want to ease it in another direction, we'll start graduating more doctors. You know, we had Dr. Zig was coming into the room here, which we haven't seen for a couple months. I don't know where the guy's been. But, you know, he stated it right clear, you know, after the Clintons had somehow or another managed to hold back on how many doctors were out there in order to keep the prices of medical care up. When I found that out, I about hit the ceiling myself. But folks, this is all on the Internet. You can go out there and look this up. I'm not going to sit here and back up everything and do your research for you. But fact of the matter is they had done this. But, you know, what needs to be done is graduate more of them. You know, the AMA, you know, is going to set standards. Well, anybody that meets those standards should be able to become a doctor. You know, and after that, make or break them in the workplace. Okay, the AMA should also be able to rule over who keeps their license if they continue to screw up. You know, and how bad it's got to be, and what happens. You know, should make a promise to people that they're going to do the best they can with them, and we should be able to accept it at that. None of the rest of us out here are doctors. Now, granted, there could be a whole lot more done, you know, as far as educating the general public on just taking care of common things that happen to people. You know, cuts, bruises, scrapes, common cold, the diseases that everybody gets on a routine basis anyway. You know, I would imagine it would be much more helpful if a lot more things were available to us on an over-the-counter basis, things of that nature. But that would only relieve their burden if they would understand this. You know, keeping all this information bottled up and keeping it inside the hospitals is doing nothing more than driving the cost of health care up for everyone. Also driving up their workload. You know, I mean, let's face it out there. Most of us learned simple first aid when we were in the Boy Scouts. And then later on down the line, if they had a good 3 or 4 years of high school learning first aid, you know, you probably keep 50% of the traffic out of the emergency rooms. You know, same thing with other things. I mean, what was it like when we were kids, you know? How many times did you go to the hospital? Unless you needed stitches or, you know, you were really, you know, something was bulging big on you, they didn't take you to the hospital. You cured it at home. You know, it was that simple. I look at all the different things you could have come up with. Hey, your parents threw you in bed, they fed you chicken soup, took care of you. That's the way it was, you know? Most of them understood what a lot of that went. And the same thing needs to happen today. All right, we've rambled on and on about this, and I see no more hands up, so I think we pretty much beat the healthcare thing with this. Well, I'm still, like I said, I'm quite irate at the way the liberals have been acting over the last few weeks. Well, at any rate, here's something to get them really, really irate. This should come out here tonight. This is off of FoxNews.com, and it's run a little behind the time. I'm not going to give you the date on it, but. Nope, matter of fact, I'm not even going to get into this because it's just too old. This is Pushback then talking about cutting down the troops in Iraq, and I thought it would be a little more applicable to today. But the fact of the matter is, news today has got it that the Iraqi people really are stepping up in the fight against Al-Qaeda. And it's more than just the armed services and the police that we have been training over there. It has finally come down to the point where the Iraqi people themselves are starting to take the bull by the horns. They're starting to point out where these people are hiding in their neighborhoods. You know, they're starting to point out the literature that they're passing around. They're starting to show the sources of where the insurrection is coming from, especially in the reigns of Al-Qaeda. Okay? And it's obviously having a huge effect because Osama bin Laden himself came out today and said, geez, we're sorry we made a lot of mistakes over there. We're sorry about a lot of the suicide bombings that have taken innocent life. No, you're not, Osama. Don't give us any of that. We know exactly what's going on over there. Okay, another issue, a little bit of good news here. I don't know how many of you folks listen to the Rush Limbaugh show, but Rush did a hell of a job last week. We're talking about smear campaigns before, and talk about one that backfired. And folks, I got a copy of the letter here. I don't have it right handy, but matter of fact, I've got to put it away so that I can frame it later on. I think it's a great one. Rush Limbaugh got a smear letter from Harry Reid and signed by 40 other Democrats in the Senate. It was basically to his partner in crime, the head of Clear Channel Networks, Mr. Mays, and it backfired on him in a big way, baby, because Rush, noting it for what exactly it was, the Senate trying to smear a private citizen, trying to renege him of his freedom of speech, trying to shut Rush Limbaugh up at any rate, and totally getting something wrong in the process, tried to quiet him down. Sent a letter off to his to Mr. Mays, the head of Clear Channel Incorporated, basically telling him he should have a talk with Limbaugh and try to modify what it is that comes out of Limbaugh's mouth. And what's going on there? Well, guess what? Limbaugh saw this exactly for what it was, baby. This is the first time that they have ever come out and tried to smear someone. So he took that original letter and posted it up on eBay and managed to fetch in 1 week $2.1 million for the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Charity Fund. Great thing, beautiful thing. It helps the kids of law enforcement officials and Marine Corps personnel whose folks were killed in action, killed defending their country or otherwise doing their job. It's great. Rush also matched this with a $2.1 million contribution of his own. and put it up there. And Harry Reid was just climbing all over himself, trying to say that if it wasn't for him doing this, why Rush wouldn't have had the opportunity to raise all that money. And almost acting as if he was some kind of a conspirator along with Rush to try to raise all this money for some worthwhile charity. Now, sorry, Harry, but it blew up in your face. You know, why this man is still the majority leader in the Senate, I don't know. They must find more Democrats in there that have got a more level head on their shoulders than this clown. You know, on top of Miss Pelosi over in the House there, the two of them. I mean, how we ever managed to get two dingbats heading off our two biggest houses of government is just crazy. Just plain crazy. All right, on top of that, I got more bad news for you liberals out there. This off of CNN.com, one of your favorites. And I'll bet most of you overlooked this or didn't see it at all. But this out of Berlin, Germany. No author to it, but it's a really good story. Germany's lower house of parliament Friday overwhelmingly approved extending the deployment of 3,000 troops and 6 reconnaissance jets in Afghanistan for another year, despite mounting public skepticism about the mission. The vote in the 613 Bundestag, 454-79 with 48 abstentions, was the final step needed to extend the mission. Public opinion polls recently indicated most Germans want the troops to come home following attacks on German forces and kidnappings of German citizens there. But Chancellor Angela Merkel's government has pressed for a renewal, saying the pullout now would open the door to a possible return of the Taliban regime ousted in 2001 and endanger years of progress in rebuilding the country. Social Democratic lawyer Gert Weichengartchen said a German refusal could lead to abandonment of Afghanistan by other Western countries. Then Afghanistan would again fall into the hands of the Taliban, he said. Therefore, I ask you to think it over carefully. A no vote would lead to giving terrorism a chance to further establish itself, to insult people, to repress women. Development Minister Heidi Marie Weikaschek-Zuhl, a left-wing social democrat, said during the Bundestag debate that troops were needed to support rebuilding schools so that Afghan children, essentially girls who were banned from school by the Taliban, had a chance to get an education. This is a real development that we are moving forward with, Weikaschek-Zuhl said. 70% of the population is under 25, and we want, through building up the educational system and above all through elementary education, to give children and youth, and precisely girls, the chance to go to school. The all-weather jets from the Luftwaffe's Tactical Reconnaissance Wing 51, Immelmann, supported by 280 personnel, are based near Mazar-i-Sharif in northern Afghanistan and can provide faster, farther-ranging photographic information to assist security forces on the ground than can unpiloted drones, according to the German Air Force. Most of the 2,800 German ground troops are in the north of the country as part of the International Security Assistance Force, or ISAF. Germany has resisted any suggestion that they should take part in heavier fighting in the south of the country. The head of the Social Democrats' parliamentary faction, former Defense Minister Peter Strzok, said the mission had already been a success and the situation in the north had become much more stable. At the same time, he warned the mission could remain in place for another decade. Now, how do you like this, folks? This is a German socialist country. Now, we know this, but, you know, this girl that they've recently made chancellor over there, Angela Merkel, is finally figuring out the right things to do. And this isn't the first thing she's done right. I don't have anything to back up what the other one that what I heard the other day, but there was more good news. Matter of fact, I think that's something I mentioned here last week, but things being what they are, you know, my mind isn't all here tonight. But at any rate, look. Even the social left-wing Democrats over there, okay, in particular, Development Minister Heidi Marie Weichengartchen noted, okay, and is helping keep them in there, okay, and why? Because she wants to see girls go to school. Now, where are the feminists in this country getting behind the battle in the exact same way? Now, where are the liberals in this country who say everybody should have an education, demanding that everyone's education be free, not getting behind us in this war and saying the exact same thing? Not getting behind us in this war and saying the exact same thing in Iraq. What's the matter with you people? Okay? Even your sister socialists over in Germany can see that. You know? Now, seeing as how most of you idiots over here tend to follow European politics, maybe you're going to go that way. You know, then again, maybe not. But we will see. But it's good to see that somebody out there is starting to wake up to the whole thing. And as a matter of fact, I have another one here right on top of this one I'm going to get into, and I think it's a great one. Let me see if I can page right through it here. Here we go. Okay, now this one here. This is Robert Gates stepping up to the plate here. This came down yesterday over the Reuters News Network. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates will consider shifting U.S. troops from Kosovo to Afghanistan next year if NATO allies do not fulfill their commitments, U.S. government officials said. Good move. Very good move, Bob Gates. Gates in Ukraine on Sunday to ask European countries for help in the war had first considered laying the threat before NATO defense ministers this week at a meeting in the Netherlands, senior U.S. officials said. But upon the advice of senior military officers, the Pentagon chief has extended the U.S. commitment to Kosovo to summer 2008. If NATO allies have not sent more troops, trainers, and equipment to Afghanistan by then, Washington will consider pulling its 1,600 troops out of NATO's Kosovo force, KFOR. The secretary has wrestled with the idea of moving our forces in Kosovo to Afghanistan, but decided late this week to extend our KFOR presence until next summer, according to Pentagon Press Secretary Jeff Morrell. But beyond that, this is very much up in the air. The secretary is disappointed in NATO's inability to live up to its commitments, and if that doesn't change before then, he's prepared to go to the Secretary of State and to the President to discuss yanking our troops out of Kosovo. Gates has grown increasingly frustrated by the failure of NATO allies to fulfill promises they made more than a year ago to provide troops and equipment to the war in Afghanistan. The secretary is particularly worried about a shortfall of more than 3,000 trainers for Afghan forces. But commanders also need more combat forces, helicopters, and other equipment. By pinning the U.S. commitment in Kosovo to Europe's commitment in Afghanistan, Gates wants to signal that Europe will be left alone to deal with a still unsteady situation in its own backyard that does not help the United States and Afghanistan, said officials familiar with the discussions. NATO took responsibility last year for operations throughout Afghanistan. The United States contributes the most troops in the coalition, or about 15,000 of a NATO force totaling just under 40,000. Washington had also added combat troops and a helicopter force last year, and other allies did not respond to a call for help from commanders. Despite 6 years of war in Afghanistan, a fight overshadowed in the United States by Iraq, violence has soared in 2007. Taliban suicide bombings are up 50% from a year ago, and military officers say the group is trying to import the deadly roadside bomb technology that has been used in Iraq. In Kiev, Gates will ask Ukraine and other members of the Southeast Europe Defense Ministerial to send troops to Afghanistan to help cover that shortfall in trainers, another U.S. defense official said. I'm good, thanks, honey. The 11-member group sent a 100-troop brigade, also called the Southern European Brigade, or Z-Brig, to the war zone in 2006. And the rest of it's pretty much blah, 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 but I think it's good. Gates is finally getting it together over there, letting the Europeans know, look, you either live up to your commitments, or guess what? We're going to pull it out of our commitment to Kosovo. Now, we're committed till the summer of 2008, middle of next year. We'll see what happens by then. But good thing, you know, pushing the Europeans a little bit. Some of them are responding, some of them aren't. Well, we will see how it goes from there. All right, folks, we have hit the top of the hour here. It is time for us to take a short break, allow the sponsors out there to sell a few goodies, allow capitalism to take free reign on the Internet, and well, of course, we always get the station identification. Other things are going to happen during this. But hang on, folks. The next hour is going to be chock full of fun, and we'll be right back. You are listening to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network. We'll be right back, folks.
Pal Talk isn't just the latest, greatest messenger, or the most diverse and vibrant chatroom community. It's the ultimate online communications tool, period. Pal Talk enhances the traditional instant messaging and chatroom functionality you know and love, with state-of-the-art voice and video that you'll enjoy with all your senses. That's why PalTalk is the world's most popular free voice and video chat instant messenger service. PalTalk. Communication beyond words.
Ladies and gentlemen, do you enjoy spending time with everyone's favorite self-appointed activist judge? If so, you'll want to visit www.politicslobby4.com. That's www.politicslobby4.com. Once there, if my show is on the air, you'll be able to click on a link directly into the chat room from which the show is being hosted. You'll have access to streaming video and polls via the Politics Lobby site, and you'll have a chance to interact with your favorite activist judge via text. So do your jury duty and visit www.politicslobby4.com and tell them Chief Justice Randy Wright sent you.
ASI. Audio. Are you ready? Video. Interactive. And you can catch it all. That's right. At ASI. In a time where good and evil have become completely distorted, one bright ray of light shines through. Politics Lobby 4. A modern-day battle of epic proportions. One light, many voices. Frontline with Kit Burke. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. And the Extreme Forum with Randy Wright. Good versus evil. Light against dark. And fact versus fiction. Stay informed. Arm yourself. And prepare for the battle. www.politicslobby4.com. Now is the time.
Hey, this is Bill from politicslobby4.com, reminding you to join us throughout the week for the best radio programs the internet has to offer. Shows like Frontline with Kit Burke, saluting our military and their families. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher, news and commentary from a regular guy. And the Extreme Court with Randy Wright, today's issues and Constitution. And when I say join us, that's just what I mean. Join us. Be a part of the show. Hope to see you there. That's www.politicslobby4.com.
Very much. Yeah, where is that fence, folks? You know, the border problem's still there. Hasn't gone away, folks. You know, it's still there. Granted, we managed to do a lot as far as, you know, chopping down what they were trying to pull off in the Senate with amnesty. No more. You know, it's time to get it done. Time for us to get on the horn, tell them we want at least the fence that you authorized put up. You know, that easy. Duncan Hunter managed to pull it off. Hey, what's going on here? Who's the mayor of San Diego that managed to put up a nice fence all across it? Now, granted, they dug a tunnel or two or three here and there, but they found the tunnels, didn't they? You know, you want to do something, you know, craziness reigns supreme. And here's one that'll really kill you. George, you're blowing it once again. I hate to say this to you, Mr. Bush, but I have got an article here tonight that just doesn't do you justice whatsoever. And as a matter of fact, it's just... Here's the way it goes, all right? Knowing full well that Mexico is what it is, okay? You give them money for whatever purposes you think they're going to use it for. Baby, they're going to use it where they need it. But this over the Reuters Network came down today by Mr. Karen Bohan. President George W. Bush on Monday asked Congress for $500 million to help Mexico combat the narcotics trade. a request that is part of a larger program for cooperation on the issue. The United States will do all it can to support Mexico's efforts to break the power and impunity of drug organizations and to strengthen Mexico's capabilities to deal with these common threats, White House Press Secretary Dana Perino said in its statement. The initial request for Mexico is part of a program that will total $1.4 billion. The Bush administration has also requested a $50 million for counter-narcotics efforts in Central American countries. The plan comes as the United States is struggling to compete with other powers in providing assistance and wielding influence in Latin America and elsewhere. Bush and Mexican President Felipe Calderon have been hammering out the final details of the counter-narcotics plan for several weeks. The Mexican Foreign Ministry said the two presidents spoke on a telephone Monday morning about the deal. The Bush administration has been pleased by Mexico's recent efforts to combat the drug trade, including raids in northeastern Mexico. Calderon deployed 25,000 troops last December to back up police in fighting the cartels amid a surge in drug-related murders. Already, President Calderon's decisive actions have had a positive effect in the United States, Perino said. They have disrupted drug trafficker supply lines and have contributed to shortages in cocaine and methamphetamine supply across the nation. U.S. officials have emphasized that no U.S. troops will be sent to Mexico as part of the counter-narcotics program, a sensitive issue in Mexico where many view a U.S. military presence as a breach of sovereignty by their rich neighbor to the north. The U.S. funds will be used for equipment such as helicopters, surveillance aircraft, and scanning equipment to combat narcotics trafficking. Some of the money will be used for training and technical assistance for law enforcement agencies. Luis Javier Alagori, Tijuana police chief, told reporters in Mexico the money will redesign the security program and bring results, but we need more intelligence, more investigative police work. Without that, no plan will work. Yeah, well, what we need is a fence. Period. Okay? We can stop them drugs from coming in over there. Hey, where's the fence? You know, that is what we have to get beaten on the congressman down there for. And that was a good idea. Willie, as a matter of fact, that commercial ran by a little too fast. But if you would put that phone number into the room there, I will definitely shout it out to the general public and let them know what's happening. But, yeah, sorry, George. No, $1.4 billion to help Mexico fight drug trafficking? Come on. Might as well just give them a blank check. Say, here, use it for whatever you need it for. That's what's going to happen. You know? You need people down there flying helicopters around? We got nice helicopters, and we can fly them over there. They're already flying around this country in defiance of our Fourth Amendment rights and looking in everyone's backyard. Yeah, the helicopters came through here last week. I do live out in one of the agricultural areas of the state. Oh, yeah, every fall, National Guard flying in helicopters, flying down low over the fields, over the streams, and over all the mountains here are looking for marijuana plants growing. And occasionally they get themselves a good bust. Personally, I think it's a shame, Mr. Was it Mr. Gonzalez or George Tenet? I believe it was actually George Tenet that overturned that one drug bust out in Utah, which was done using high-tech surveillance equipment, and it was directly in his statement when he overturned the whole thing and threw it out was because they had violated that man's Fourth Amendment rights. You know, the one that says you're secure in your person's privacy and your things and in your home, doing what you want, you know. I'm sorry, personally out there, I don't have any problem with anybody's growing whatever he wants for his own personal use in his house. You know, I don't have a problem with it. But as far as all the drug trafficking coming up from down south, bad, bad, bad thing. Too many murderers, too many nuts coming through. Did anybody see I forget if it was on Fox News or whatever, but the rape tree? You know, where the coyotes that are bringing people through there routinely rape one of the young girls that they bring along with them, then hang her panties up in a tree for a trophy. Sickness, man. Sorry, we need defense. We need defense in a bad way. It's time to start closing that border right down tight. That $1.4 billion could go right to that closing that down, and that would take care of the drug problem. And Calderon could fix whatever he's got to fix on his own side with his own money. He's already got 12 million people up here shipping money back down. I can use some of that. Ah, my friend Mr. Rizzo is here, and he's got his hands up. The mic, my friend, is all yours. Good to see you.
Thank you very much, VB. Enjoying the show as I usually do. Once again, your suggestion that President Bush has got it wrong again, I support that. We go back to September 2nd, just this past month, to paraphrase some statements made by Mr. Calderon, He made the suggestion that Mexico does not end with its borders. He made the suggestion that Americans, in enforcing our immigration laws, were acting in a manner that was inconsistent. He also suggested that wherever a Mexican is, Mexico is there as well. Now, today, Mr. Calderon made some more very interesting comments. May I read them very quickly, and I will quote. The President of Mexico defended the right of his countrymen to migrate to the United States and to be treated with dignity, no matter whether they arrive legally or not. In a speech Thursday, Felipe Calderon told the governors of both U.S. and Mexican border states that immigration is, and I quote, a natural phenomenon that is socially and economically unavoidable, close quote. Quote again, I would also say it is advantageous for the United States economy. The Mexican president said the two countries have complementary economies. The U.S. economy is capital intensive, while the economy of Mexico is labor intensive, close quote. To prove that point, he said it will be only a few years until there are 70 million retired U.S. citizens. At that time, Calderon continued, most Mexicans are younger than 30. He also rejected arguments that Mexican nationals are taking jobs from U.S. citizens. Mexican workers in the United States are a complement to workers, not a substitute, he said. Mexican workers deserve dignified treatment, close quote. Calderon also told the governors that he has not given up trying to find economic opportunities to allow people in his country to work there. How novel. He said Mexico needs to do that to keep its best people at home. The most strongest and daring people are those who migrate, he said. They are willing to face death for the survival of their families. Governor Janet Napolitano said, however, that the need for foreign workers has to be filled only through legal means. One of the problems that we have is we need to lift the visa caps in the United States so that more legal immigration can occur. There is always going to be a legal migration between our countries, and we need to recognize that, she said. But it does neither of our countries any good to have massive illegal immigration going back and forth. Again, I don't think there is any intention under this administration to do anything whatsoever about illegal immigration. Where's the fence will be something we were saying up until I don't know when. But again, I find the comments made by Presidente Calderon that clearly suggest that they are in the people business. And he will see to it in any way he possibly can that as many illegal aliens or immigrants come to this country, I will not use the politically correct phrase undocumented workers. This has gotten to the point where it is totally and completely unacceptable. And it does appear as if we're going to have to rely on individual state legislative branches, individual state governments to enforce the laws of our country, which are not being enforced by the executive branch. Thank you for the time, BB, and the comments.
My pleasure. You're right. Yeah. There will be a need for that kind of work. There's no doubt about it. But that need needs to be determined in an orderly fashion. You know, and I don't know why Bush dropped the ball on this. You know, once upon a time he said that, you know, and before anyone could get a visa to come to work here, employers would have to prove that no American wanted the job. You know, and I stated publicly at the time that it's a very easy thing to do. You go right through your labor boards. You know, every single state in this union has an unemployment compensation board. Okay? You all know what I'm talking about. It's where you go if you've been laid off to start collecting some of your uninsurance premiums back in the form of a weekly paycheck or a biweekly paycheck until you get back on your feet again. You know, none of this is run by tax money. You know, I don't care what anybody says. We all pay into it through our labors while the time we're working there. Yes, your employer pays it, okay, but they, once again, you know, as I stated in the past, your employer only has that money because you have supplied the labor that created that wealth, and you are paying into an insurance program. So there's no tax money involved here, okay? And you all know that once a program runs out for you, you know, after your 13 or 26 weeks or whatever your state has got going for you, that it's done. You know what I mean? They just cut you off and they say bye-bye. All right? Well, these people are fully in a position to be able to judge whether or not there are American workers able to fit jobs for American employers. Okay? I don't know about the other states, but here in this state,
You know, suppose you were making $40,000 to $45,000. Sorry, I lost the mic there for a second. Suppose you're making $40,000 to $50,000 a year. Okay, now you get laid off. All right, and through no fault of your own, business changes, climate, what have you, whatever. You know, so you get down to the unemployment office and you file. Okay, well, fine and dandy. Well, you know, the unemployment office in this state will allow you to make over and above, you know, will allow you to make up to whatever it was you were making before, including the unemployment. You know, now let's say you're collecting the max, okay, which I think is like $400 a week, something along that line. All right, well, and you were taking home before $750 a week. Well, you can go out and get a job where you can earn $300 a week and still collect your $400 a week, keep your lifestyle up. You know, now the job obviously isn't doing what you were doing before, but hey, you know, there's something that comes with being self-sufficient. Something also comes with having an extra $350 on top of the $400 the state's paying you. Okay, the state is fully aware of this, and they don't have a problem with that. Okay, well, that is exactly the people who are in position to tell, you know, American employers, you know, where there are people to fill your jobs. You know, and that's what they do. They do that in this state. Look, if there's an employer out there that has a job, and it's filling that needs to be filled, he goes to the unemployment office looking for warm bodies to fill that job. Well, the unemployment office may pick you to go pick that to go take that job, especially if it was as much or more than you were working before. Your refusal to take that job automatically disqualifies you for any further unemployment insurance claims. I don't have a problem with that either, okay? You want to work? You need to work? You mean take what you're doing? If somebody found you a job, well, you go take that job. You know what I mean? Hang on to something, baby. It's better than nothing. That's the way I look at it. So these people are definitely in a position to be able to do this, and there is no reason in hell that they can't. All right, now somebody had his hand up there, and he took it back down again. Love to see your hand back up. I'll add to this. Otherwise, I'm going to move on. Got a next little topic right here. Okay, no hands are coming up in the room. Now, this one here, I've got to congratulate the people in Louisiana. I don't know how many of you folks have heard this out there. This actually came down on the news wire yesterday. But Louisiana, here's the headline. Now, there's no author, once again, coming down off the Reuters News Network. Louisiana elects Jindal, first Indian-American governor. Republican Representative Bobby Jindal was elected governor of Louisiana on Saturday to become the first Indian-American to lead a U.S. state. With most of the precincts counted, Jindal, 36, had 54% of the vote to win without a runoff in Louisiana's electoral system, where candidates of all parties run in a single primary. His nearest competitor, Democrat Walter Bolasso, received just 18% of the vote. The Oxford-educated Jindal will replace Governor Kathleen Blanco, a Democrat who did not run again after she was widely criticized for bungled recovery efforts following Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Blanco narrowly defeated Jindal in the 2003 election. Jindal, whose first name is Piyush, is the son of immigrants from India and the first non-white Louisiana governor since Reconstruction in the 1870s. My mom and dad came to this country in pursuit of the American dream, and guess what happened? They found the American dream to be alive and well right here in Louisiana, he said in a victory speech. He is a conservative who ran on promises to stop political corruption, cut taxes, and improve schools. Now, folks, is that good news out there or what? Louisiana has elected a Republican governor. Now, his parents came here. It doesn't really, they're calling him an Indian American, but something tells me down the bottom he was born here. He's an American citizen. Maybe he can move on. But look at this. You know what I mean? Isn't it amazing how some of the foreigners can come over here, you know, grab us by the, you know, by the short hairs and turn around and say, look, this is what it means to be an American, you know, and make the case strong enough to get elected to be a governor. I think that's a beautiful thing, and I congratulate most heartily the people of Louisiana for doing this. And I wish Mr. Jindal the best of luck in his job. You know, I hope it all works out really good for him. Okay, any hands up? Anybody want to comment on this? Yes, no? No? Nope, good. You're all being quiet. That's fine. We got plenty more to dig into here tonight. Got quite the pile here and a stack of stuff. Okay, I think we're going to turn it over here and get back into... what's happening over in the Middle East and other places. Some more in a foreign department. As you all know, there's a lot of things going on with between Turkey and the Kurds in the north, and the U.S. is right in the middle of it, of course. This off the Associated Press by Matthew Lee came out 10 minutes before the show started. The United States has opened a diplomatic full-court press to keep Turkey from invading northern Iraq, an incursion that could further destabilize Iraq and the region. President Bush, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and other U.S. officials implored Turkish and Iraqi leaders to work together to counter the threat from the outlawed Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK. U.S. officials said Monday as Turkish troops headed toward the border and tensions soared. Bush spoke by phone to Turkish President Abdullah Gül and by a secure video conference to Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to urge the two governments to work together to seal off... To deal with the group after a weekend ambush by rebel Kurds killed 12 Kurdish soldiers and left 8 missing, the White House said. To Gül, Bush expressed his deep concern about the recent attacks by PKK terrorists against the Turkish soldiers and civilians. Sportsman Gordon John Drow said, "The president reaffirmed our commitment to work with Turkey and Iraq to combat PKK terrorists operating out of northern Iraq, and told President Gül that the United States will continue to urge the Iraqis to take action against the PKK. Bush and al-Maliki, meanwhile, agreed to work together in cooperation with the Turkish government to prevent the PKK from using any part of Iraqi territory to plan or carry out terrorist attacks," John Drow said. "The Prime Minister agreed with President Bush that Turkey should have no doubt about our mutual commitment to end all terrorist activity from Iraqi soil. The U.S. designates the PKK as a terrorist organization." In addition to Bush's conversations, Rice called Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan and the leader of Iraq's Kurdish region, Masoud Barzani, on Sunday to press the U.S. case for restraint from Turkey and action from Iraq against the Kurdish militants. Rice told Erdogan that "we do not believe unilateral cross-border operations are the best way to address this issue." Rice told Barzani that our Iraqi authorities needed to take action against the PKK, either on their own or with the Turks. McCormick said a sentiment echoed Monday in a joint statement issued by Rice and British Foreign Secretary David Miliband, who was in Washington. Pretty much goes on there, but folks, we do have something boiling up over here. And of course, this has all been fueled by Nancy Pelosi and her goofy treatment of the Armenians and the 100-year-old crisis there last year. Now, this is nuts. You know, another reason that I think Nancy Pelosi just needs to be removed from office. The woman is a nut job. She's a moonbat and has no idea exactly what kind of crap she's stirring up around the world, and in particular in a place where we were already embroiled. All right, we have Mr. Harry Ann Crystal. You've got your hand up. You'd like to come up to the mic, make a comment, make a statement, ask a question. Whatever you'd like, my friend, the mic is all yours.
Thank you, sir. My name is Sergeant Good. I served in Iraq from April 06 to April 07. I was part of the Baghdad Provisional Reconstruction Team. My part of the mission was to work and deal with the Iraqi legal system, such as the police departments, the correctional institutions. One of the most famous ones was Abu Ghraib. I worked with a few of the unknown ones. My mission there was to train and to teach the corrections officers on how to deal with inmates. And there is a vast change that is going on within that institution. The judges are working with the police. The lawyers are working with the judges. There is a vast change that is going on. Our men and women that are serving right now, I'm home. I'm back in the United States. I'm home. Our men and women out there are continuing that mission. They are seeing a drastic change in what's going on with within the Iraqi government and on the street. There are Iraqis stepping up and recognizing what the United States and the coalition is trying to do for them. They do recognize what we are trying to do for them. And it's working. And the reason I say that is because we see it firsthand. I seen it when I was in Iraq. I seen it when I was in Afghanistan and from November 04 to June 05. I see kids playing in the street where they couldn't at one time. I see kids coming up to our troops and asking us to play soccer with them. Well, what the United States calls soccer, they call it football. I see that. I played soccer with a whole bunch of kids in Iraq. There was no cameras. There was no media around. It was just me, the people I was with, and some Iraqi kids. And we played football with them. Or soccer. So there is some change. There is a lot of change being done. General Petraeus is doing an outstanding job. I was there when he took command. And it's working. General Casey, before him, did an outstanding job. Mrs. Condoleezza Rice is doing an outstanding job. She actually will sit there and listen and talk to imams. She will sit there and listen and talk to Prime Minister Maliki. And our government is, in my opinion, is doing everything that they can to keep the promises that we made. But I've seen it firsthand, ladies and gentlemen. Believe me or not, it makes no difference. But there is changes being done over in that country, and the changes are for the better. And I wish CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, and all of them would actually show you the changes that are being done over there. I wish they would have live 24-hour feed just to show you the job that our men and women are doing. Because I'm going to tell you, it's outstanding. And it is a great job. And if it means me laying my life on the line so one of those people over there could live freely, then it's my life. Profit. Your mic.
All right, Daryl, you kind of slipped in there. Harry, I forgot what you said your name was there, Sergeant, but I salute you. I want to thank you very, very much for your service over there. It is heartwarming. Hey, a little slow, but I'm glad you took your time. You made it known what's going on. You know, it's people just, you know, have no grip in this country of what our mission is over there. And you, my friend, in your own simple way, found that you have got a profound grip on it. There is no doubt about it, so that they can live in freedom. You know, and that's the thing about it over here. You know, I'll tell you something. Even Rush Limbaugh has been stumped a couple of times here. And, you know, I'm trying to help Rush out by getting through to him. He's impossible on the phone. Try to get through to his number sometime. It's nuts. But, you know, a lot of people over there asking us, when is this war going to be over? You know, well, I'm going to tell you something. This war is going to be over when those people enjoy the same liberties that we do. Okay, let's not forget that liberty breeds prosperity. Prosperity has always bred peace, and it has always worked that way out wherever liberty has been tried. And that is what we are fighting for here. It is the cause of liberty, as opposed to the causes of forced collectivism, as opposed to a political ideology that has hijacked a religion and is trying to force its political ideology down others' throats. I'm sorry, folks, but collectivism is slavery. And I don't care if you have a one single taskmaster, a group of taskmasters, or a headless mob known as a democracy. Okay, collectivism is slavery. Okay, we are over there trying to, we're fighting, and we are trying to liberate these people. We are trying to let them sow the seeds of liberty, so that when it bears fruit, they will have some prosperity. Because we know full well, liberty breeds prosperity, prosperity breeds peace. Prophet of Doom, you've got your hand up. The mic is all yours. Prophet, you there? Hello, step up. Okay, you're not there. That's no problem. No big deal. We all make a mistake on a button. Okay, instead we have someone up here named Tash Kurgan. New to the room, but hello. How are you? And make your peace.
Hello, my name is Tash Kurgan, and I'm from Afghanistan. I saw sorry for my broken English, but I just listened to the last portion of the dialogue, the speech, but I think that the reason you are there, or the United States is there, it shouldn't be like that you let those people like enjoy the peace, because you didn't say that in the beginning. You said that there's like weapon of mass destruction, and then in Afghanistan you said that there is Taliban, then now you say that you say that you're fighting for, we are just confused why you are there. We welcome everyone who just help us, you know, but this should be, the reason should be like known. I'm just curious to know what is the reason why you are there, how long you are there, what are you going to do? Because, you know, I've been working with Americans. I don't oppose the idea that to help other people, but the reason should be known. Today we say something, and tomorrow we say something else. That is kind of we just. Lose people's support. They say, yeah.
Well, sir, I can put this to you rather succinctly. Maybe not so succinctly, but I'm definitely going to try to put it to you as best I can. Sir, we are there so that you can determine how you are going to run your life. In the end, that's what it's all about. You don't need someone over there telling you what it is you need to do with your life, where you should be working, how much money you should be taking, how much sacrificing you should be making, wondering why you can't get the goods and services that you need. You should be able to find these things freely, openly. You should be able to go into any open market over there and deal with that in any way that you can find affordable. You should be able to get as much money as you possibly can for doing work that you like to do. Okay, these are results of what we call liberty. Okay? And liberty, my friend, is what happens when you free men from other men. It's that simple. What it comes down to is self-determination. What it comes down to is that you, okay, will make up the rules that will govern your life. And that you could do anything you want with your life except force other people to do something against their will. You, my friend, are going to be able to go out there in the God's great green earth and make your own living by your own rules. That's what we're over there to do. Okay? We're there to help you form yourselves a government that you freely elect. Okay? That will be there to work with you, that will be there to serve you, and will be there to keep the peace. And that's it. We're there to make sure that, you know, liberty, that whole idea of liberty, okay, which is something we've embraced in this country a long time ago, and a lot of people in this country here in America have forgotten what it's all about. A lot of them will see that word on the coins that they use every day and forget every little bit of its meaning. To them, it's nothing more than a little word on a coin. But it's freedom, my friend. Okay, it's freedom to take any risks that you want over there with your own life and to bear the fruits that come out of those risks and to take those fruits and keep them and do whatever you please with them because you earned them. That's why we're there. We're there to help you enjoy freedom. Okay, freedom from any tyrannical power that wants to exercise any mastery over you whatsoever. Okay, you, my friend, are a free person. Okay, God has given you that freedom. God has given you that liberty. No man can take it away from you. And it doesn't matter what that man calls himself, whether he calls himself a president or a governor or a mullah or a sheik, or it doesn't matter what title he has, how much money he's got, or what family he was born into. He has no power over you. The only way he can get you to do anything for him is if you agree to it. And so we want to make sure that if you, whatever demands you make before you go into that agreement, you can either make them or you can walk away from the agreement as you please. To live free, my friend. That's what it's all about. And we're going to stay there until we see to it that you are living free. That's all we're there for, man. We're just going to help you find freedom. Maybe something that you've never known in the past. You know, as far as we know, you people over there are living in more or less a caste system. You know, where you have the haves, the have-nots. You've got the leaders that have been in charge and remain unquestioned. Well, they're not going to have any power over you anymore. Okay? Your power will be completely self-determined, be completely self-generated, and the things that you do for others out there will be completely by agreement or disagreement by you. That simple. If you want to help people out, well, it's fine. Go right ahead and help them out. If you think other people will only be helped out if they pay you what amounts of money that you want, well, that's fine. You know, you can agree to do it, and if they don't want to give you the money that you want, you can disagree and walk away from it. That, my friend, is what freedom's all about. All right, my buddy Unit is up next to the mic. It's all you, bud. Take it away.
Thank you, BB. I think you let Pelosi off a little light on this Turkey resolution. It wasn't a boneheaded resolution. It was a cynical attempt to torpedo our effort in Iraq. That's the only way to look at it. They knew exactly what they're doing. Why at this time? They knew what Turkey's reaction was going to be. They wanted Turkey to react that way because it was an attempt to torpedo our efforts in Iraq. It wasn't boneheaded. It was cynical and it borders on treason.
No, I think you may well be right. You know, I am letting her off. Well, last week I really beat her up hard. I didn't get too much of a response out of it. You know, but I would love to see a letter writing campaign go to every single one of the representatives in the Senate or into the House of Representatives and say, hey, you know, time you elected a new leader, time you elected a new Speaker of the House because the one you got up there is dangerous to the peace and stability of the free world, definitely a danger to what's going on in Iraq. You know, you're right. She is, it is a very cynical attack, you know, doing nothing more than trying to undermine the Republicans in Congress, you know, in order to get Democrats elected, you know, to advance socialist policies. Well, what kind of idiocy is this? You know, the idiocy is on the parts of the people who agree with her and keep her there. Okay, and these are the people that I was talking about at the beginning of the program, those that need to be shunned a year from now, you know, should they come into power. And I'm still talking about this, and I'm going to mention it every week, folks. Put a little bit of money aside. Get yourselves together and get ready for a little bit of a battle. And that battle is going to be when you just no longer feed those that want to destroy you. It's going to take away their power to do it. It's a very, very simple thing to do. Nobody's going to have to fire a shot. All right, Sergeant Harry, you're back up there, my friend. Thanks again for your service. Thank you for spreading liberty around the world. You know, what you're doing over there, exactly what needs to be done. Thank you for playing soccer with those kids when you did it. Show them we're not all bad guys over there. Show guys like Tash Gergen over there that, you know. I'm going to tell you something there, Mr. Tash Gergen. In this country, if anyone was to ask anyone else over here to become a suicide bomber for some ideological cause, in this country, we would laugh at them right before we told them to shove it where the sun don't shine. And, my friend, you will have the same reasons to do the exact same thing. All right, Harry, it's all yours.
Well, I came up here to talk to Tosh. Tosh, I know where you're coming from, and I understand your question. I met President Karzai. Okay. I was in Nagalam. Okay, Camp Blessing. That's where I was stationed. I understand your question, and I understand your doubt. Okay? Because the same thing the Taliban... What we're saying to you right now is the same thing the Taliban told you when they took power. So I understand your doubt. How is President Karzai, by the way? See, ladies and gentlemen, there's two sides to this story. And I do. I thank the good Lord. I thank the good Lord that you do not see the same things that I have seen. And that Tosh has seen. Okay, Tosh has seen a lot more than I have over in Afghanistan. I served in Afghanistan. So I know what this man is facing. I know his tribals. I know his tribulations. I know what this man is going through right now. There is a big difference from what we see on the news than what is actually going on over in both countries, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. Not even 10 times. Okay? What I see on the ground and what I do for a living, and I do this by choice. And yes, you notice I'm being very, very careful what I say. There's two reasons for that. One, I will not bash any elected official under Article 88. Two, I'm not going to sit there and give out any information on an ongoing mission. Okay, so I'm being very selective of my words and what I try to say. Yes, I'm a reservist. Now. But I'm still military. there needs to be some separation between what the military does and political policy. In my opinion, I'm not speaking for the military. I will never speak for the military. That's General Petraeus. That's General Caldwell. That's all them. They report directly to the president. But we do need a separation, in my opinion, or we're going to see the same things we've seen in Vietnam. Okay, with the way the troops are being handled in the combat area. I'm a history buff, alright? So, I do study my history. And I'm probably going to get in trouble. I'm probably going to get a call in the morning and sit there and say, hey, I want to see you tomorrow. Hey, that's okay. That's okay. They kick me out tomorrow. It don't matter to me. But I'm trying to keep it as politically correct as I possibly can and stay within the UCMJ, which I do serve. I also serve the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's where I took my oath to. I took my oath to every last free-speaking person around the world. And that's what I stand for. That's what my brothers and sisters are out there standing for right now. And Tosh, you sound like one of my former translators. If I'm not mistaken, you speak both, you speak two different dialects. Pashto and Dari, don't you? You're Mike.
Go right ahead there, Mr. Tosh. It's all yours.
Yes, I speak like five languages, and I speak Pashto and Dari, and I have been translating for quite a long time, like 2 years. And I have worked with the different organizations, but there is one thing. I mean, when I see the moderator or facilitator talking about freedom, it looks that we don't know what freedom is. Actually, we know that, but the thing we don't know is your intention, your policy. I mean, If you are just letting us enjoy freedom, that's a great favor. We appreciate that. But that can be, I think, through talking, negotiation. I don't say that go and negotiate with Taliban. It is not that Taliban is bad only, but Taliban is bad in any, like, Taliban ideology or Talibanism, they're all bad. But the rest of the thing, I think this can be, like, through talking, negotiation, dialogue, and see, I mean, we don't know what your intention is. You are supporting Musharraf, for example. You say that we have been like under dictatorship. We have been lived in tribalism. I say that no. I mean, You're right in your wrong that you say that you're helping us because you have replaced them only. I mean, no difference. You kill, there's no reason. You do things with no reason, you know. I mean, you impose your agendas and say that, oh, I'm helping you. And see, I mean, in Pakistan, I mean that almost everyone knows that that Pakistanis are being regrouped and supported by Taliban are regrouped by Pakistan, and they enjoy the freedom you are talking about. They enjoy that freedom in Pakistan, Taliban. But I mean, you say that you're helping us, and what kind of help is that? And regarding Bertu Musharraf, I prefer a person who can leave us alone, who do not interfere in our internal affairs. And as far as the suicide bombing and these things are concerned, I think that's wrong. First, initially, that's wrong. Secondly, that is kind of like a reaction. We should go deep in the history of the conflict and find out why they are doing that, when it started. I mean, I am against that, and there are a lot of people, even the side member himself, he's against. But because no one is going to kill himself, I mean, he is happy. But I think there is a pressure. And in the, given that there is ignorance and things like that, that can be easily utilized. So we have to, I mean, the policies should be revised. And then, I mean, you say that Iraq, Iran, and you're helping us. How? How? With whom? No one consulted me. No one talked to me how he is going to help. I mean, you just selected your group. You just selected your group and your friends who know you the nation, the people in Afghanistan and in Iraq, they don't know them. I mean, these are our concerns. Otherwise, we appreciate help. We appreciate like international help from internationals, from international community, anyone who can help us, I mean, build our country, stability in our country, and also build our nation, build a good relationship with the rest of the world, that's appreciated.
I'll tell you, he wanted to know who was invited us in there. Who's Osama bin Laden and the Taliban? They invited us in. Taliban had 30 days to give up Osama bin Laden and all his cohorts. Refused to do it. We said then we were coming after him, and we meant it. Okay, we do not sit on our hands when people attack us. We are the strongest, largest nation in the world, and we are also the most giving. Almost one of the most forgiving, you know, up to a point. You know, we have helped more people around this world find a better life than anyone. They are the ones that brought us in there. You know, what we found on the ground over there, you know, that's another story. You know, of course, we're always going to find pockets of places where people just such as yourself are well-educated. They're going to make your way through the world no matter what happens. We appreciate that. What we wanted to see is you lead the way at this point now. You know what I mean? Let the other people in your country understand, you know. You are free now. You know, if you don't like the way your government is doing things, we want to see you free to change that government at will. All right? In this country here, we change our government over every 4 years. All right? Nobody gets to rule over here. And they only serve at our pleasure. Okay? The government's going to run that way in your country. All right? And that's what we expect to happen. The Taliban, as you know, raised holy hell. They suppressed your women. All right, you know, we've all seen movies of what they in some of the football stadiums over there. You know, poor girl was caught talking to someone who was not her husband or her brother, and was dragged down to the football stadium and got a bullet through the head. You know, our understanding this happens quite frequently, or was happening quite frequently before we showed up there. Now, as far as what's going on in Pakistan, yeah, you're right. You got a very, very tricky situation over there. All right, we kind of need Pakistan because we need their flyover space in order to get into your country and take care of the Taliban. Beyond that, it's a very, very sticky situation. I'm going to leave that up to the government. It's not easy. I understand what you're talking about, especially with Bhutto coming back over there. Yeah, Musharraf has got his hands full. But Musharraf has been very accommodating to us up at this point. Okay? In fact, the matter is, we saw what was going on in your country. We did not like the way the Taliban was running things. We believe that you will be able to run things better on your own once you have some security there. Right now, that's what we're trying to provide, is that security. We're also working to help with your infrastructure. You'll note that there are a lot of people from all around the world in your country. You've got Germans over there. You have NATO forces in there. Matter of fact, you even have some Canadians in there helping out. Yes, we will continue to help out until you folks are on your feet and you're able to become productive members of a free and quiet and peaceful world. All right. Harry, you're back up there, but keep it real quick. We're starting to run towards the end of the show.
All right, again, I'm going to address my Afghani friend. I know what a Hajj is. Okay, it's an imam in Iraq. And I'm going to tie this into about what's going on in Afghanistan and what's going on in Iraq. There was an imam, a religious leader. There's a couple of them right now that are speaking out against the insurgency. There's a couple of Hajjis in Afghanistan that are speaking out. Again, ladies and gentlemen, we are doing, as military, the best job we can. We are doing our mission that is given to us from the President of the United States down to General Petraeus right now, who's in charge of Iraq. I can't speak much about Afghanistan because I haven't been there since June of 05, but I can speak about Iraq. General Petraeus is getting his orders, he's doing his job, he's doing his mission. That private, that PFC, that specialist, that sergeant, that corporal, whatever, we're doing our missions. And there is a lot of things being done that is not being told on the mainstream media.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Harry. Much appreciated for you to weigh in on this. Thanks again for your service. Thank you. You're one hell of a man. All right. Now, we got to keep it moving here. I've only got about 3-4 minutes into the rest of the show, and I've still got 3 other hands up. Guys, take a minute apiece and state your piece. There you go. Mr. Unit, you're next. Unit, my man, come on up to the mic. Okay, you took off. Doug Brew, it's all yours.
Okay, Tash, I didn't hear everything that went on before, but I have to call you BS on a couple of things that you said. The first one, when you said it's the same, it is not even close to being the same. There aren't American soldiers executing women in the football stadium, as was already mentioned. There aren't women being stoned by American soldiers, which was happening under the Taliban. You wanted to know about freedom. You weren't sure what freedom was. I'll tell you what freedom is. You're on the internet right now. You weren't on the internet under the Taliban, and you certainly weren't in a chat room talking like this on the internet under the Taliban. That's what freedom is, my friend. You're real good on your talking points, but you were wrong, wrong, and wrong. I yield the mic.
Mechanic, the mic is all yours.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to ask a question of all those that are Muslim. Why aren't you looking for Osama if he's innocent? And if you're Muslim and thirsty, have a Camel Cola. It's the renal thing.
Comedians everywhere. All right, Unit, I see you back up there. Go right ahead, bud.
Okay, thanks. Tash, I disagree a little with BB.
We're not in there to give you freedom. That's just a side effect. We're in there to make sure that Afghanistan is not a den of terrorists attacking us. That's why we're there. Now, we left you guys alone. After, you know, the Russians were driven out, we left you alone to your own devices. And what did we get? We got the Taliban, and we got Osama. So, you know, we're going to give you the opportunity for freedom and democracy, Tash, but we are there to stop Afghanistan from becoming a den of terrorists like it was when we weren't there. That's why we're there. It's for our own interests that we are there. We will, as a side effect, try to let you set up a stable democratic government. But we're not there for that reason. We wouldn't be there had the terrorists from Afghanistan not attacked the United States. That's why we're there. And, you know, we'll stay there until that's accomplished.
All right, Tosh, you got 60 seconds. The mic is all yours. After that, we got to close her down here because the show is almost over.
Yes, I don't know. I mean, I'm just new in this conversation, this dialogue. But you say that you're there for your own interests, so we should know that you're thinking about your interests and not about us. Maybe I'm wrong, but the fact that I'm here using internet, that is, I think it was something, going to happen, even if you were not there. And, I don't know, everyone is talking here and saying that we will be there forever or for a certain time. Are you guys, talking on behalf of the government, or did you talk with people in Afghanistan that they will welcome you or not? You're just kind of, I'm sorry to say, this is, very arrogant tune, you know? We will be there,
Sir, nothing in the world was more arrogant than to have 11 people coming out of there, 19 people coming from your country over here and flying planes into our towers and killing 3,000 of our people in one fell swoop. That was arrogant. Okay? That was pure arrogance. Okay? Watching those people go over there through the Valley of the Buddhas and carve out all of their eyes, that was arrogance. Okay? Watching the way they treated the women and children over there, that was arrogance. Watching the suppression of the Afghani people by Arabs calling themselves your leaders merely by the virtue of the fact that they work under the same faith, that is arrogance. Okay? Yeah, we may seem like we're arrogant. We may seem like we have got a little bit going on here and might be a little bit of differences in opinion. Okay? But we do know this. Okay? That if you are free and you are prosperous, you will be strong and you will be peaceful. That will be a side effect. But yes, count on this, okay? Terrorists who are wreaking international terror that are operating from along your borders and from deep inside your country, they are definitely our first mission. We will rout them out. We will kill them. That's what we're there for first. Okay? We understand that we can't stay there forever. We are going to stay there long enough, though, until you, the Afghani people, do not allow this to happen amongst yourselves. Until you, the Afghani people, become free trading partners. Until you are at least peaceful, okay? Until you are somewhat prosperous. And there is no danger of any collectivist organization worming its way back into your hills. All right, now, Tashkun, if you want, you can hang on in the room here and discuss things with people. But it is 10 o'clock. The Maitre D, once again, has got his keys in the door there, tapping his foot furiously. He's got a pretty little head sitting out in his pickup truck out there. But the waitresses have already checked out. They're gone. One of them's still hanging out in the bar. She's going to be making some drinks. But the lights are low. The tables are all piled high with the chairs. And it's once again time to close up the cafe. Of course, the bar will be open. Chat room will be open here. You can all talk for a little while longer. But I got to say goodnight, folks. From the Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders Voice Room on Pal Talk. You have been listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com and the ASI Radio Network. Thanks for listening, folks. We will be back next Monday night 8 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on those channels. See you later, folks. Thank you very much for coming tonight. It's been a hell of a night.